Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. Data compiled by the Washington Post found that one quarter of the people shot to death by police in the first half of 2015 were in the midst of a mental health crisis. A large majority of these 124 people were armed, most often with a weapon less lethal than a firearm. However, the Post found that, quote, in most cases, the police officers who shot them were not responding to reports of a crime. More often, the police officers were called by relatives, neighbors, or other bystanders worried that a mentally fragile person was behaving erratically. Reports show more than 50 people were explicitly suicidal, end quote. A study by the National Nonprofit Treatment Advocacy Center found that people with untreated mental illness are 16 times more likely to be killed during a police encounter than other civilians approached or stopped by law enforcement. Overall, the National Alliance on Mental Illness estimates that people with mental health conditions are four times more likely to be a victim of violence than the general public is. Last week, Baltimore police officers responded to a bomb threat at Fox 45 television studios. After a standoff, a young man who appeared to be wearing an explosive device under an animal costume was shot three times by police. His father told reporters that his son believed the world was going to end. Also this month in Baltimore and earlier this year in Prince George's County, police were involved in attempted suicide by cop scenarios. Across the country, stories of people with mental illness dying after encounters with police have grabbed headlines. Today, we look at the Crisis Intervention Team model, CIT, which begins with training to help police officers recognize the signs of mental illness and learn approaches to resolve situations safely. The Crisis Intervention Team model emphasizes community-based care for people with serious mental illnesses and encourages communication between law enforcement agencies, healthcare professionals, nonprofits, and the community at large. Anne Arundel County has been using the CIT model for 2 years, and to discuss it with me, here in Studio A are Jen Corbin, Anne Arundel Crisis Response Director. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Police Lieutenant Steve Thomas, Shift Commander for Anne Arundel's Northern District. They have worked together to teach Anne Arundel's CIT course. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And with us by phone is retired Major Sam Cochran, who founded the first police crisis intervention team back in 1988. He served with the Memphis Police Department for more than three decades. Today, he is co-chair of the CIT International Board of Directors. Sam Cochran, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here today.
And let me start with you. In 1988 in Memphis, you started this new approach to policing that involved partnering with mental health colleagues, the Crisis Intervention Team model. What prompted you to develop this program?
Well, actually, let me make sure we start off with the correct partnerships. There's actually three major partnerships. There's multiple partnerships, but the three major partnerships is law enforcement, mental health providers within the communities, and also advocacy. And our primary forerunner of the advocacy would be NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness. Now, the event started from a 1987 shooting event that our law enforcement officers had responded to a mental illness crisis call event of a young man, 26 years old. He was armed with a knife. He was cutting himself. Family members were reporting he had a mental illness. After a brief encounter with this individual, he was shot multiple times by our officers and died as a result of that, which caught the attention of the community. Now, this was not just the one event. There were other events, but this event pretty much spearheaded a voice, couldn't we do better? And that pursued a community active campaign to make some changes, and we came up with a program called the Crisis Intervention Team, CIT model.
And how would you summarize? Actually, let me ask Jen Corbin to do this, since you also work with it every day. What's the briefest way for someone to understand what CIT, what that approach is, what it includes?
Well, it's the approach of coming upon a call and thinking a little bit more kind of the whole approach. So not just police officer approach. We want to make sure the person's safe and the officer's safe, but thinking about what's going on with the person you're approaching and how we can de-escalate and work with the family. Because like you said, in a lot of cases, families are the ones that are calling. And so what Sam's talking about is that that third piece, which is so important, which is NAMI, and it's working with the family along with the police department to de-escalate whatever situation is before them with the person that's suffering at that time on the call.
And Lieutenant Steve Thomas, when are you approaching this call as a police officer in a different category than your other calls? I mean, do you know as you approach, oh, this is a CIT situation, this is not a regular police response?
There are times that we receive information that it may be someone with in a mental health crisis. However, we always look upon officer safety and the safety of the public first, but it is using the skills that are taught in the CIT training to de-escalate, and that when force does have to be used, that an appropriate level of force is used.
So, Sam Cochran, let me ask you that question too. How are CIT calls different? In what ways are police encounters involving the mentally ill different from other calls police respond to?
Well, again, you kind of alluded to it at the very front. There's a lot of fear that are present at these crisis events. And there's at least three levels of fear. It's the person who has a mental illness is likely to have a significant amount of fear. Bystanders or family members that are present have their own personal fear because of the crisis. And even law enforcement responding have a level of fear. So those levels of fear have to be addressed. And I think that the CIT training helps to present a level of confidence. Probably best said by leader. We have a CIT that performs as a leader, and that structured leadership brings about a sense of confidence with regards to the skills. We do a lot of skills training within the 40-hour training program, and those skill levels are intended to slow things down, de-escalate, but clearly also understand the complexities of the mental illness. When officers have a high level of confidence, they're more likely to stay with their training as opposed to that of moving on up to a level of some type of force.
That's Police Lieutenant Sam Cochran, the founder of a model of policing called retired Major Sam Cochran, founder of CIT, Crisis Intervention Team, model of policing here on Midday on WYPR. Also with me is Lieutenant Steve Thomas of the Anne Arundel Police and Jennifer Corbin, the Anne Arundel County Crisis Director. And you can be part of this conversation if you have questions about this way of policing. If you've had experience with it, give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Major Cochran, does CIT look the same in urban areas as suburban or rural areas?
Yeah, actually all areas. Every community is different, therefore uniqueness of the program fitting the community is best served. So when we're looking at trainers, we try to bring in these partnerships from the local so that they are invested. We want people of the community to have an ownership of the program. Many times I make presentations and my first remarks are CIT is a law enforcement program, and people that are in law enforcement oftentimes look kind of strange at that comment, but the truth of the matter is it's a community program. And that community program means that the community is invested into the outcomes and into services. You can have a great training program, but if the community is lacking with regards to mental health services, you're really making it very, very challenging. So it has to be a community addressing not only the crisis issues of training, but also crisis services within communities.
Crisis services. So it's not it's the response at that moment, but it's also a follow-up.
Oh, absolutely. I think that law enforcement, sometimes you kind of open the program in discussing issues of tragedy, such as force, they're oftentimes having to be used, and that's true. But what about the lives of individuals when law enforcement officers at 10 o'clock at night have to make the decisions, and there's no other decisions within a community other than the local county jail? That's a tragedy within itself. And I think that you, when you're looking at CIT, you're supposed to be looking beyond the training components of a great 40-hour training program. You're supposed to be looking at systems and infrastructures as to whether or not services to people of the community are being met. And I'm talking about services of people who live and cope with mental illness. And there's many individuals that do well managing their illnesses, and there are services that are available. But there are many communities, and some of the communities I'm afraid are in some of the more rural or communities that don't have the availability, and that's where it becomes a responsibility of the community, the county commissioners, leaders, state legislators, to make sure that those types of services are being met.
Jennifer Corbin, who shows up at a call?
So everybody's different. In our county, we actually run our CIT as a unit, so our specially trained officers are actually paired with mental health clinicians. So who shows up on those calls is the trained officer along with a mental health clinician. That's kind of building on what Sam just said, that when that call is completed, there is follow-up. We can make sure those providers in the community, that the person is linked, that the family is getting support. We're looking at the whole system, not just the person who the call's for, but how we can help the family deal day in and day out with mental illness, but also how they can be linked and making sure that linkage occurs. So when we respond, it's an officer and a clinician together.
Major Cochran, I know we're going to lose you in a couple of minutes, and there's a couple of things I want to cover before I do lose you. As I understand it, almost every state has at least one crisis intervention team. Now, 11 states have statewide CIT initiatives. Why aren't there more?
Well, it is a challenge. Probably one of the challenges is the 40-hour training program. Those of us that are moving CIT forward really believe that 40 hours is critical. A lot of programs, I find it very difficult to, especially rural areas, to move officers away from their assignment. But if you do some planning, if you maybe carve out some line item budget levels for sheriffs and chiefs to send somebody to a 40-hour training program, this can be accomplished. We're moving, but it really takes many champions within the community. It's not just a training program. We have some great training programs that's going on, but many times people that have implemented only training have not fully accomplished the full intent of what CIT is about. And I think that those communities that are invested in CIT, when CIT reaches an identity, then they reach an ownership of it. And then that's when it becomes sustainable. So I think every community really needs to look, how do we want to serve the people who live within our community? And I think this is one particular area that needs careful attention and very much scrutiny with regards to that response by law enforcement and mental health working together.
I really appreciate your talking to us about it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Retired Major Sam Cochran founded CIT training with the Memphis Police Department in 1988. He's co-chair of the CIT International Board of Directors. We need to take a quick break here. When we come back, you can be part of this conversation. We'll continue with our two representatives from Anne Arundel County and take your calls also. You can phone us at 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. According to the National Alliance of Mental Illness, which Sam Cochran referred to in our previous segment, one in five Americans experiences mental illness in their lifetime. One in 25 experiences a serious mental illness in a given year, serious enough to interfere with major life activities. And for some, a mental health emergency can result in contact with law enforcement. Today we're discussing a community policing model that connects police and mental health professionals to ensure that the needs of persons with mental illness are met. Kevin Davis, now police commissioner in Baltimore, was chief of the Anne Arundel Police Force in 2014 when it adopted the CIT model. Davis told a meeting of the International Association of Chiefs of Police that he had observed that less than 4% of calls to Anne Arundel County Police were to report a crime.
So that, you know, harkens the question, what are all those other things that the police are responding to? And a lot of times it's people with mental illnesses who are in crisis and their families are in crisis. We take 5 people into custody every day and take them to local hospitals for emergency psychiatric evaluations. So that is an inordinate use of our resources. And we think that it's short-sighted for law enforcement to just live in that moment. We've got to do something the day after.
Do something the day after. In the studio with me are two people who do that day after work, who implement the CIT model in Anne Arundel County. Jen Corbin, County Crisis Response Director, and Police Lieutenant Steve Thomas, Shift Commander for Anne Arundel's Northern District. What would you like to ask them? Have you lived one of these situations? Police called for someone you know who is having a crisis. We'd love to get your thoughts about it. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us at 410-662-8780. So, Jennifer Corbin, that challenge for the police to be there the day after, how do you pick that up in Anne Arundel County?
So because there's a joint relationship between the mental health agency, which I belong to, and the police department, and working together as a CIT, we get those calls from the police reports, and we are able that next day to follow up on that call. Now, we're normally on the call as well, so we're building that rapport the day of. But the important thing is the next day, when they're either home and calm or maybe inpatient. We actually will visit people inpatient as well to build a rapport. Why is that important? Because if they're in crisis again and they see a familiar face or they see someone they know, the likelihood of them de-escalating and calming down quicker is improved because they're comfortable with the person who's on the call. This is also important for the family because the family then builds a rapport with the CIT teams that we have, and they know that's a place they can call and get help immediately. What's so important in this model is to understand the follow-up is not just the day after. We're following these cases for 30 days later, 60 days later, until they're handed off to a provider or their needs are met and they feel like they can do it on their own. The CIT model is we're going to keep going and helping and assisting until that crisis is resolved.
And Lieutenant Steve Thomas, tell me what your police then are doing. I'm talking about police who are not on a CIT team, regular cops.
Well, part of the training is to understand signs and symptoms of mental health crisis.
How do you train cops to recognize signs and symptoms of mental health crisis?
Part of that is through the CIT training, but as a department, last year we trained every officer in mental health first aid. And with that is we talked about different scenarios and different skills to recognize that. When we recognize that, we can then call out a mental health clinician to come to the scene with us. And they're there and we stay with them. And they start and have the interaction with the family and the what we call consumer, the person in crisis, to build that relationship so that in the future they can reach out to help with proper interventions.
How long have you been on the force?
I've been about 20 years.
And did you think when you decided to become a police officer that you would be putting this much energy into mental health issues?
Not at all. I think things have changed drastically in the past. I think we did a lot of things differently, but it's reaching out and finding the root cause now so that we can solve a problem.
How are your police officers reacting to this duty? Does it seem to them like something they should have to do?
Actually, when it's done properly, it actually reduces calls for service and makes our jobs as police officers a lot easier. That instead of, we may have received a call for someone daily or weekly, when they get the proper intervention, we usually get a call monthly, yearly, or not at all. And those are the cases where we're not really responding for crimes and that have been committed, but they call the 911 for help.
We've got lots of people who want to be part of this conversation. Oh, actually, we've lost somebody, but we still have Christine. Christine, calling us from Baltimore.
Hi. Morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you. So I had a question and then a comment. My question was, what sort of training are the 911 respond people getting to identify, you know, before the fact, as much as possible, people who would be appropriate for this type of intervention?
Thank you for the call, Christine. Jennifer Corbin?
Yes. So in the CIT model, there's actually a dispatcher's training that occurs. Now, I can't speak for every county and how the county polices choose to go about that, but it is very important because it starts with that initial 911 call. Because if we know right at the beginning that, and we ask the right questions, the dispatcher asks the right questions, they will immediately send out the CIT team along with patrol. So they are getting training. It is a part of the model of CIT that dispatchers are trained. It's just done a little differently.
Can you give us a little more insight into what that training is? I mean, because it seems challenging enough to me to make this assessment when you arrive on site, but at least then you do have the ability to look at how someone's behaving, to watch their body language, to make eye contact or not make eye contact, all of that, none of which the dispatcher can do.
Right.
So how do you train that? I mean, what is it? You said ask the right questions. Are there some questions that are pretty sort of fail-safe in terms of unearthing if this is a mental health crisis?
Yes. So especially when you have someone calling in with a suicidal subject or someone that's, you know, kind of making threats of harming themselves or others, you know, there are questions that can be asked that are really of great importance while we're en route to figure out, you know, what we need to address, what safety concerns are we going to have, both for the officer and clinician who are working together. So a lot of times, you know, they might ask, are they currently on medications? Are they taking their medications? These are things that the operator can ask while they're on with the person while we're en route. It might be questions along the lines of, while they're there, they're looking through the CAD system to see have there been calls for service before.
The CAD system?
The police.
It's computer aided dispatch.
Okay.
So through that system, while we're en route, we can look to see have there been calls for service there before, which gives us a lot of detail into maybe what's going on with the person who the call's for.
Thank you. We have a call from Patty in Annapolis. Patty, welcome to Midday.
Yes, did you want me to talk on the air?
Yes,
now?
You're on the air. What is your question for our guests?
I was asking about those who are have dual diagnosed drug problems, alcohol problems, and mental illness. What are the changes in the treatment they're getting from police officers if the police have been trained more in mental illness on the street, and also what they're doing for recommendations for aftercare?
Thank you for the questions, Patty. I don't know who wants to address that.
Well, we're actually doing quite a bit. What we call co-occurring, which is the mental health and substance use piece combined, where a lot of people these days are using substances to treat their mental illness. We are actually doing a lot of training that's dealt with in mental health first aid, which all the officers received their certification for last year. It's also a big piece of CIT training. There are 2 hours where they learn about the co-occurring piece, and we actually bring family members into the school when the officers are taking class so they can hear from actually people who are in recovery. They also do a site visit to one of our providers who treats the addiction piece. And they also go to a provider and do a visit where mental health treatment is being done so that they can meet and see how that recovery occurs. But when it comes to patrol in general, what we're doing is following up with those people in the ER normally. Within our system, within our CIT system, there is also a hospital diversion piece. So the patrol might have to take them to the ER or they're suffering an overdose, which we know heroin's been a big piece lately, especially in Anne Arundel County. We are working on that by providing that follow-up in the ER. So our teams are meeting with people in the ER and getting them linked to treatment right then and there.
And in your experience, Steve Thomas, are people more likely to get linked to drug treatment going through the CIT process than just other encounters with police?
I believe so, because we attempt to build a relationship when it's a non-adversarial time. But even when not, there's follow-up there, as in the mental health clinician goes out and maintains contact with the person who was in crisis to assure that they're doing things to, or that the person is taking the steps to take care of themselves and can be there to help get through some of those roadblocks.
That is Lieutenant Steve Thomas, shift commander for Anne Arundel's Northern District. We're talking about crisis intervention team here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also here with me is Jen Corbin, Anne Arundel's crisis response director. And we're taking your calls at 410-662-8780, or you can send an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm especially interested in what I understand is a technique that tends to be important in the CIT responses, and that is de-escalation. Tell me what you mean by that, Jen Corbin.
There's a lot to it. So de-escalation is actually, like Sam Cochran said, it's a big part of our program. In the CIT school, they spend half a day learning these techniques, and then we actually bring role players in where they have to play out scenarios with the techniques they've learned throughout the week in their 40-hour training. We're talking about body posture. We're talking about how we present ourselves when we come into the call, our tone of voice, the types of statements we use. Are we, you know, commanding something to occur instead of asking them? So a lot of it deals with your body image, your body, how you're coming into the call, also how you're addressing the person when you come in.
And describe what it is that you are trying to de-escalate.
Okay, so for many people with mental illness, what we need to realize is there's been a lot of trauma in their lives. And in this day and age, many of the people we're going on calls for have been emergency petitioned in the past by police. So, So they have been deemed unsafe to themselves or others. And when that happens, they have to be handcuffed and taken to the hospital. And what we're learning from this process is that when they see police another time, family calls, a uniformed officer shows up, the panic in that person who is in crisis goes up. And so what we're trying to teach officers is to explain why you're there. You know, when you come onto the scene of someone, even just letting them know who called, why you're there. Because a lot of times they're not aware that someone has made a call, or they're not clear as to why the officer is there. Remember, sometimes to them, they're not in crisis. So we explain to officers, you need to be clear. You know, introduce yourself, tell them why you're there, tell them who's called and who's concerned, if that's appropriate. But also we talk about not coming in all the time kind of aggressive, in an aggressive tone or in a way that is threatening to the client. So we talk a lot about body posturing as well.
Lieutenant Steve Thomas, this strikes me as polar opposite of how I expect a police officer to behave during a call from a citizen who someone has called and there's some kind of a problem. And I expect, you know, sort of take charge and firm voice. And I mean, this sounds completely counterintuitive to me.
We had a lot of success. It is historically, if someone in crisis, and the historical perspective of the police was to arrest them for disorderly conduct. But we saw after we did our training, and we had a lot of complimentary letters in from the public of how officers de-escalated situations. There's one at mind where a mother sent us a thank you letter for the way the officer handled the circumstance that she said that she really expected for her and her daughter to be arrested. He de-escalated the situation, contacted another family member, and no one was arrested, and the situation was taken care of.
Tell me more about what he did.
He spoke to them, found out what their problem was. The daughter was in crisis, but with her being in crisis, she was sort of, I don't want to say disorderly, but she was yelling. She was screaming. Mom's trying to calm her down. The officer went in with a calm demeanor in which he was able to calm both of them down and have a family member come and help them.
I think part of why it intrigues me so is, as I'm sure you're aware, there was this situation in Baltimore last week when a 14-year-old boy with a toy gun was shot by police. His mother was taken to a police station for questioning. She said she was handcuffed and put in a cell. And some people have criticized police for not allowing the mother to go directly to the hospital with her son. And it makes me wonder, can the skills of CIT be applied to other situations like high emotion, not strictly mental illness?
Well, it absolutely does apply to high emotion of trying to calm someone down. And with that is using the same skills that to bring them down to a level where you can communicate with them effectively.
So I guess I'm back to a question that I tried to ask a few minutes ago of Sam Cochran. Are the kinds of calls in which a CIT team responds, are they completely different than other calls, or is this something that police find works its way through a lot of their response to citizen calls?
Yeah, a lot of times we're responding to a call and not necessarily having all the facts, and once we're there, the officers can recognize the signs and symptoms. And then we can call out a CIT team for further assistance or a licensed clinician to come out and assist us as well.
Jen Corbin, you were nodding your head also a minute ago.
Yeah, so I don't want it to be that it's just about mental illness, because the calls that our CIT team goes on can be varied. Some of them are just domestic disputes where sometimes, you know, having the officer and the clinician there to work that piece out, high levels of anxiety that might be going on, like Lieutenant Thomas was just saying with the young lady. These are ones where maybe it's a public disturbance, people arguing loud, and really having that CIT officer who can come in with a little bit of authority, but being able to de-escalate allows then the clinician to work out that kind of mediation that might need to occur between family or people who are not agreeing on something. So not all of our calls are mental health calls.
Another quick break here. When we come back, more about mental health, police training, and the importance of building connections between law enforcement community members and healthcare professionals. You can be part of this conversation. What would you like to ask our guests? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm speaking with Jen Corbin, Anne Arundel Crisis Response Director, and Lieutenant Steve Thomas, Shift Commander for Anne Arundel's Northern District. We're talking about CIT, Crisis Intervention Teams, a model of policing which works to address the special challenges to law enforcement posed by persons with mental illness. You can be part of this conversation. Send us an email at midday at WYPR.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. Lauren has called us from Baltimore. Lauren, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. I'm calling about the situation that happened last week in Baltimore at the TV station, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering if your experts think if anything else could have been done besides shooting the young man with bullets, like maybe tasing him or tranquilizing him. I'm wondering if something else could have been done.
Lauren, I appreciate the call. This was the young man who was wearing a hedgehog costume and what looked to be he told people at the station that he was strapped with explosives. Jen Corbin, how do you think that could have been addressed?
I'm not sure that I'd want to be comfortable addressing that particular situation, because I don't want to question what was done, not being there, not knowing all of the details, you know, not fair to do. What I can do is just talk to how we handle it in Anne Arundel County.
I presume it wasn't a hedgehog.
So, but when calls like that come in, yeah. So when we have barricades or different situations that occur, bomb threats, things like that, they have a direct line to myself and to the CIT team. What we can do at that point is, if we know who the person is that they're dealing with, is we start working on with the negotiator or whoever's dealing with that situation to address it and make sure that, that we're asking the right questions and that they have all the information they need to make sure that they're understanding the person they're dealing with. So a lot of times in these cases when there's barricade, suicide by cop possibly, you know, like in this case maybe, is that we have that conversation going on while the situation is with mental health clinicians. I think that's the key. We've left police out for a long time to make these decisions on their own and to negotiate on their own. And what we're doing differently in Anne Arundel County is they're consulting with mental health clinicians and saying, am I missing something here? Is there a better way to ask this question? And, you know, a lot of times we've been very successful because we've changed the direction and how we ask the question. So I don't know in that case what could have been done differently, but that's how we're addressing it in Anne Arundel County.
Jen Corbin, you were quoted in a 2014 news article when CIT was just getting started in Anne Arundel. Quote, if we can interact with these people, there is an 89% chance of this going in the right direction. Close quote. I'm not going to ask you. I'm going to ask you, Lieutenant Steve Thomas. That implies to me, and Jen can tell us if I'm wrong, that at that point it looked like there was about a 10-11% chance that these techniques wouldn't avert some kind of violent situation. Is law enforcement comfortable with those odds? Are you willing in answering one of these CIT calls to try techniques which no technique is going to be 100% effective? These sound pretty effective, but you're taking a risk.
Every call a police officer goes on is they're taking a risk. And with that, we train to use the appropriate level of force when possible. And what I mean by that is, like in Anne Arundel County, we have a very strong push that every officer and sergeant will be equipped with a taser in the near future. We're close to that now. But with that is, when is appropriate to use a taser, when it is appropriate to use a firearm. And unfortunately, based on the circumstances, it's going to vary. We have an obligation to the public to keep them safe. And if we believe, if someone's saying they have a bomb, the taser really isn't an effective weapon because you cannot get the distance close to them to maintain your own safety and that of the public. But with the 90%, we're looking at follow-up care as well. If the person gets proper intervention, we will have a 90% success rate with that person. And with that, we sort of look at it. And something I learned from Jen is, are they able to take care of themselves? Are they able to go to school, go to work? And are they able to maintain relationships in their life?
Well, what do you do, Jen Corbin, when someone doesn't want treatment? If they're not,
you keep offering. In our unit, there are many times, because a lot of times with the CIT component, you're going out on people who are severely mentally ill. And by that I mean they have a difficult time making good decisions for themselves. But by going out and doing those follow-ups in the home, that's the difference. You're not asking them to go to the doctor themselves. You're going to them and you're bringing the clinician to them and the officer. And eventually that rapport building we're finding is leading to them agreeing to go. Just the other day, we had a guy who was out of control, was not going to go. And then finally he built a bond with our one CIT officer. And when our officer said, well, I'll take you. He goes, you'll take me? Yeah, I'll take you. He went voluntarily to get help.
And so, how long did that connection take to build?
It took about an hour and a half of conversation between him, the clinician, and the consumer, because they were definitely not thinking clearly and agitated. But it just took letting them make the decision. A lot of times I think where we're missing the beat, and this is where CIT is so important, we're telling people what to do this day and age. If we let them have a little say and we listen, and that's what I'm teaching officers, they'll eventually come around and agree with you, but they need to be the one to make the decision. And if the officer's always coming in saying, you will do this, you will do it this way, and it is only my way, that's where the combativeness comes in those calls. But if we allow ourselves to listen to what the client wants and listen to what's going on and what they're dealing with, eventually I always tell officers, if you take 5 more minutes on a call, you'll be amazed at where you'll get with someone if you're not rushing that call for service to end quickly. So I think in this case, just being able to listen and allow the consumer to have a say is sometimes important.
Lieutenant Steve Thomas, tell me a call that sticks in your mind.
Well, actually, something that Jen and I recently went out to was a homeless area where we met a young man who was homeless. We talked to him in his non-adversarial time. I went back out with one of Jen's care coordinators. Again, she spoke to him, and then he recently called in and said, "Hey, I need help. And can you help me get help for substance use?" And we also know that he does have, it's co-occurring with other mental health illness.
If you'd like to be part of this conversation, if you believe that there are some misconceptions that police have about mental illness, give us a call. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. What part of training, you've been through the CIT training, of course.
Yes.
So what surprised you most? What did you learn in training that you had to sort of convince yourself was true?
Well, I don't know if I had to convince myself, but I thought it was one of the strong parts is when, and Sam talked about it, is the advocacy of the family members. And when they come in and are part of the training and they talk about the relationships of their family members, and it sort of gives officers a different view of this person. They're a person, not just a homeless person, but they do have a family. They have parents, they have brothers and sisters and children. And a lot of time it is linking them back to their family who can give them social supports to help for their treatment.
Jennifer, you have mentioned two types of training, the mental health first aid, which I gather is a more general training that all police officers in Anne Arundel get. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And then the particular CIT training. What should people understand about the difference between them?
So the mental health first aid training is a basic course that anybody can take in the community. It's a layperson. We teach a law enforcement model, a public safety model, but it's an 8-hour course. And it's a really great way of understanding kind of just the basics of different types of mental disorders. But it also teaches you how to get help and what types of help are out there and what to do when you're waiting for someone to respond if you're involved in a mental health crisis. CIT, on the other hand, is really, really specific. It's 40 hours. It's 2 or 3 hour blocks of specific training on med management, bipolar, schizophrenia, co-occurring. So there's a lot more pieces to that. And that really is geared for the officer.
I read that part of the training includes helping people understand what it's like to be hearing voices. How do you do that?
So it's a program called Distressing Voices, and it's basically a program where for about 2 hours, officers wear headphones where they're actually hearing voices from a person who created the program who is schizophrenic. And in doing that, they have to do 4 different tasks throughout those 2 hours. Very interesting when the officers are experiencing it. And when we debrief them afterwards, they really have a new lookout on what's going on. They're realizing how difficult it is to answer a question when there's someone in your head or in your ear saying something that might have you questioning the person that you're talking to. So when we do that, it's very interesting because they get a new perspective
on what
it's like to be schizophrenic or what it's like to hear voices.
Ken has phoned us. Ken, welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
What is your comment?
My question is, with a large homeless population who may not have a family support system and is suffering from mental illness and other issues, how do you assist them?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Lieutenant Taylor, you want to address that?
We'll link them up with a care coordinator. We'll have the licensed clinician come out and meet with them and meet with the care coordinator who can follow up services in the future. But as well, recently, Jen and I went into a camp, and we actually took some of the local ministers with us who also spoke with them to try to give them the moral support and social support that they may not receive from their family.
So this wasn't responding to a particular call to the police.
This was a complaint of the homeless community being in a residential area. And so Jen and I went out and to see how we could help.
And took some clergy with you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And and spoke to a bunch of people at the time.
It was
Tell me about it.
So what it is what we need to remember, and Sam was hitting on, is this is not just police and mental health. This is a community thing, and we need to bring people together. Resources need to be for the family. So what we've done is we have really, in the last 3 years, built a network of churches who are amazing resource for people who are in need. And you have to remember, a lot of churches host the AA and NA meetings. There's a lot of those things. But in this case, when we go out to homeless camps that are in their district or near their church, you'd be amazed at how the churches will help. A lot of people are homeless because of their mental illness and because their inability to kind of manage their money or to keep a job. And so what we were trying to do in this case on visiting this tent city was to just kind of see who was out there. Was there anybody that wasn't in our system that we could help or link to resources? And believe it or not, we've been able to already place two of the people that were out there 2 weeks ago.
Place them into treatment. Mm-hmm. Oh, into treatment.
Housing treatment, yes, because they were co-occurring.
We're down to just a couple of minutes, and I realize I didn't follow through when we were talking about the odds of this working. Give me an example of a contact that didn't work from the standpoint of a CIT outcome. In other words, I'm trying to understand how you decide, okay, we need to revert to more traditional policing because this could go out of control.
Well, we had one recently because our goal really is to keep them out of jail. A lot of times for us, jail is not the answer. We do have a jail diversion program within our crisis system. And one of our big issues is while they're in jail, they're getting some treatment, but not the treatment needed. And still, when they come out, they're still going to have the issues they have. In one of our CIT cases recently, we were visiting, the person was deteriorating. And again, it was going back to the question you asked about what happens when they don't want treatment. There are some people who we just can't convince to get treatment no matter what. And their decompensation leads to a criminal act. And eventually it comes to a point where they have to kind of serve the time for their charges. Now, that person went in, served their time, and actually is getting released this week. And we will be there on that other side to receive them when they come back out of jail. Because while they're in jail, the hope is that they did get on their medication and they did stabilize. But there are times where we're not going to be successful. I don't want it to sell this program as everything is successful. There are times when people won't get the help they need, and eventually something occurs that is criminal in act, and they have to serve the time for what they've done.
Well, I really appreciate your giving us this insight into it. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jen Corbin is Anne Arundel's Crisis Response Director. Lieutenant Steve Thomas is Shift Commander for Anne Arundel's Northern District. Earlier, we talked to retired Major Sam Cochran, who started the CIT model in 1988. I also want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch for our guest today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in Monday. We'll speak to author D. Watkins about his new book, The Cook-Up. I'm Sheila Cast. They say we might see some sun this weekend. I hope you have a great weekend.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.